is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The news from the Nobel Peace Prize Committee in Oslo. Nobel Peace Prize awarded to Japan Atomic Bomb Survivors Group. Nihon Hidankyo movement, recognized for decades of campaigning against nuclear weapons. This involves 106,000 survivors still with us from the twinned attack on Japan at the end of the Second War on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. A man who introduced me to the details of that attack from both sides, the bomb makers, the bomb droppers, and the victims of the bombs, and afterwards, Charles Pellegrino, author of To Hell and Back, a.k.a. The Last Train from Hiroshima, story of survivors, double survivors, numbered among the 106,000 who are with us today. Charlie tells me there's one double survivor still with us, a young woman no longer, Kenyu Fukui. Charlie, a very good evening to you. Your book takes the story from Hiroshima to Nagasaki. How does it do it? Why do people travel from one city already destroyed to another city about to be destroyed? Good evening, Charlie.
Good evening. There were many reasons. Many of the people, approximately 300 people, were traveled from Hiroshima to Nagasaki on the first two trains. They got out of Hiroshima after the bombing. Many of them worked for Mitsubishi, and they were being brought south to Nagasaki. Some of them, for instance, there was a young nurse who was Kinyori, the double survivor who's still alive. She was traveling just to get home, to try to get home to her mother, and with her brother. Her survival was an improbable thing. She was up in a hill in Hiroshima at the house when her brother was being very bratty that day, would not go to his school detail, her younger brother. And that basically changed her whole pattern for the day. And even right up to the last minute, he was having a bit of a tantrum. And so she went out onto a balcony and was hanging the clothes. And she was hanging up these white sheets. And for people who have seen all the mockery of those duck and cover films from the 1950s and 60s of what to do if there's an atomic bomb, she became one of the reasons for that, because a single white sheet reflecting a lot of the light from the flash from the bomb, a little more than a mile away, a single laundry sheet is what saved her from severe burns. The house crashed down around her. She and her brother were somehow protected. Sometimes when a building collapses, you get cross beams of wood crossing in just the right way that sort of tent a person in. They were able to get out to escape. She joined immediately in the work of rescue and first aid, even though she had a nail so deeply embedded in her own leg that it was actually in a bone, and part of that nail would stay there permanently. An officer got her and her brother onto a train to head down south to Nagasaki, and they got down to the city. They switched trains and were on another train when the second atomic bomb exploded. Among the few people who understood, she and her brother, when they saw the flash, to just jump down onto the floor of the train and avoid the burns that were about to come from the flash heating up to temperatures during the first half second.
Bomb became Nakusha. Who were they, Charlie? Who were they?
Anyone who was exposed. And in fact, we're now on the third and fourth generation Hibakusha, because the parents often carried radiation in their own bodies from the food they ate that was grown on contaminated land, and so on. So these are the people who were the exposed. One thing that was very feared, and many of them were children who survived when they grew up. They were not allowed to get married in most cases. Families would not want a survivor of the bomb to marry into the family, because one of the horrifying effects was any child in a stage of rapid cell division and differentiation of tissues in the first trimester of a pregnancy, those children exposed to the radiation were usually stillborn, and it was a case of the development. You had children who looked like very primitive mammals, in one case even like a kind of amphibian. They were stillborn. Those who were born, who were where the pregnancy was in the first trimester and they were exposed to the gamma rays and the neutron spray, those who did survive were severely handicapped. So even though, as time has shown, the next generations of children were born, in fact, even if a fetus was in the second or third trimester of development during the exposure, they were generally born and lived a normal life. Three, four generations on of Hibakusha, that fear has really not shown itself to be founded. But still to this day, if you are in Japan and it's known that you're descended from people of the bomb, there's a reluctance to let you marry into a family. They were denied health coverage. They were often denied even education. If you came from that area, businesses didn't want you to be investing on you, investing in you and training you when it was feared you might come down with a rapidly developing cancer and die at any time. So there was a lot of prejudice against people from Hiroshima and Nagasaki that stretched through decades and to some degree even into time present.
The education in Japan about the bomb and what happened to them, is it good education? Did they avoid it, Charlie, for 80 years?
Actually, everything about the bomb was pretty much censored. Even some of the graves that are, you know, to school children who were wiped out during the blast, the graves, they were allowed to have the infinity sign, but no mention for decades that these were atomic bomb deaths. One of the people with the Nobel, she carries around a long yellow ribbon that's about 3 foot wide with the names of the children and the teachers, about 350 of them from her own school. She survived alone because she was called away to work in decoding messages and in a military bunker. And that's why she survived and none of her friends did.
When you put
and that Setsuko Thurlow.
When you put the book together, you were able to talk to a number of the double survivors who are no longer with us. What did you learn from them, Charlie?
Not only the double survivors, but the people who lived into old age, most of them knew family members who were exposed, who ended by alcoholism and early death, even suicide. Those who lived, they lived by really finding a purpose in life. Generally, that purpose was never again the use of an atomic bomb for any reason whatsoever, and attempts to educate the public. And in recent years, during the last 15 years, many who kept their stories inside, including some of the double survivors who came forth for the very first time, they had meant to take their stories to the grave, never to talk about it. One young woman said, "I would rather feed my mother poison than ask her to remember it for the stress that it would cause her." But they realized that they were all beginning to pass away. They were getting on into their 90s and that they needed to record their messages for history, because we've now entered an age where there's a kind of denialism that the radiation wasn't that bad. A widespread belief that the atomic bomb was just a big flash of light and people disappeared instantly and painlessly. And only in very few cases right near the hypocenter did people disappear instantly. For most people, even those who left shadows on walls, They survived for days or weeks with one side of their body severely burned. So many of those shadow people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they walked away leaving their shadows behind and then died afterward very painfully.
You and the director James Cameron interviewed one of the double survivors, I believe, right towards the end of his life. Who was that?
That was Sumo Yamaguchi. And he survived. He's one of the very, very few that we know of who was shock cocooned and shadow shielded twice within the zone of Ground Zero. In fact, he's one of only two people that we know who was within Ground Zero both times and survived. Ground Zero defines the area where the flash is deadly, the blast effect, everything is generally flattened down to the ground completely.
What did he remember for you?
An awful lot. The second time around, he was in Nagasaki at the Mitsubishi offices, and he was describing, trying to warn his coworkers in one of the rooms what the Hiroshima bomb did, that it was one bomb, and that the moment you see this flash, you must dive to the ground immediately and stay on the ground. And he had a boss who did not believe him and was saying, you had a head injury in New Zealand. You're not thinking right. You're not doing the math right. How can one bomb do this? And then there was the flash, and his boss and everyone else in that room dove to the floor. They ended up being the only survivors in the whole building, partly because of the action they took, partly because they were in the only part of the building that was still standing after the blast. They were in an office located behind a steel and concrete stairwell that acted almost like the prow of a ship cutting through water or the nose of a plane cutting through supersonic wind. And the forces went all around them. And that office was still somewhat intact after the blast. No one else in that area survived.
I'm speaking to Charles Pellegrino, the author of To Hell and Back, which is also known as The Last Train from Hiroshima, about double survivors. It will be produced by James and directed by James Cameron in future, but we're looking right now at the news of the Nobel Peace Prize going to a group of the survivors who have these decades as endured discrimination and ostracism in early decades by the Japanese society. When we come back, what is it that they have made of their lives that is right now a campaign to do away with nuclear weapons? And is that a credible ambition at this point in the 21st century, given what we know about the nuclear threat? Charles Pellegrino.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.